reality, I guess. Which is a joke, of course. Go Fuck Yourself is located near the Capitol building. The sign is lit up white and letters are bold and black. And for a moment I wonder what kind of woman names a business something like that. Apparently, Izzy Gray. The streets are still open when I park my car. Declan and crew still a few minutes away, according to a new text, and I get lucky with a spot right out front. I wait there, car engine off, darkness all around me, and look across the street at a busy little place called the Tea Room. Inside, there's tables filled with couples, no doubt celebrating the most fake holiday on record like it actually means something. All smiles, holding hands, gazing into each other's eyes like dumbasses as they wait for some equally stupid romantic dinner to appear in front of them. I bet some of those guys have diamond rings hidden in the food. I bet some of those guys will be asking that all-important question every woman seems to wait her whole life for. I bet some of those guys will end this day more miserable than when it started. A knock on my window draws my attention away from the tea room and back to the job. Declan is standing on the passenger side of my car making one of those roll-your-window-down gestures that actually has no meaning in modern times since windows don't roll down anymore. They slide down, as mine does when a button is pushed.
DEA and dogs are on their way.
Sure, I say, getting out of the car and joining him on the sidewalk. We're meeting them out back to keep this shit quiet a little longer, he says, nodding his head across the street at the tea room. I narrow my eyes, trying to get his meaning. He says, Gray is over there having dinner. Gonna keep this low key as long as we can. Ah, I say, tugging my coat closed to keep the chill out. Well, called that one right. Whatever poor asshole is having dinner with her tonight will most definitely be going home miserable. We slip into a narrow space between her building and the one next door and come out into a small parking lot off an alley. There's a whole team of FBI guys at the door already, wearing black vests with large yellow letters on the front and back. The guy in front is holding a battering ram poised in position, while the two behind him have guns drawn. I yawn. Declan sees me, closes his eyes for a second, misses the actual ramming of the door, and then opens them, still looking at me. Be present, he says. This shit is no joke. I'm here, I say. The three guys with the guns go in first, battering ram set aside now, and Declan and I wait it out as they search the place. TV makes our job look a lot more exciting than it really is. I mean, I haven't ever had to go inside a building alone like Fox fucking Mulder and take my chances. You send in the real team first to do your dirty work. Then guys like me go in after it's all clear. By the time it is clear, the DEA has shown up with dogs, and Declan and I enter behind them. There's no one inside, so I just stand there, looking around. Lots of smaller rooms in the back, like little offices, but with no computers or anything. Just tables. Maybe consultation rooms or something. There are motivational posters hanging on the walls. Posters that say things like, there are no traffic jams on the extra mile, and success is not a destination, it's a journey. The front room is huge. Tall industrial ceiling with open ductwork. One side has mats and punching bags hanging from the ceiling, like they practice kicking men in the balls over there. The other side is set up with low tables and big overstuffed chairs, and it barely takes any imagination on my part to picture small groups of sad women sitting around them, drinking coffee as they lament what their lives have become. Declan disappears out the front door. I stay behind, hidden in the shadows, and watch as a small woman with long dark hair and fiery eyes comes running across the street, forcing her way through several Denver cops who try to stop her with a mad grab at her coat. Izzy Gray. But she makes it, and stands toe-to-toe with Declan, who is at least a foot taller as they talk. Or more accurately, she yells at him, her arms flailing as the whole "what-the-fuck-do-you-think-you're-doing" act plays out. A guy with a dog brushes past me, goes through the front door, and stands next to Declan, waiting to be seen. I push past people after him, wanting to hear this part, and end up standing next to the dog as it pants, looking up at me with a wide, dog-faced grin. I actually smile at him, because... dogs.
"Finn," Declan says, "take Miss Gray down to Lakewood for questioning."
"What?"
the woman says. People have her by the arm now. Two men. Two big men. And then, shit just goes awry. Her body twists, her arms and legs also in motion. She's got one restraining arm bent behind the guy's back, and he drops to the ground crying out in pain. The other one gets a chop to the throat that leaves him gasping for breath, and even though I'm the agent and she's the suspect, I find myself rooting for her to take out Declan, too. It's not personal or anything. I just like to root for the underdog. She doesn't. Take him out, that is. A massive show of force has her face down on the pavement, her cheek pressed into the sidewalk, as she spits threats about lawsuits and unreasonable violence. Seconds later, she's led away, wrists zip-tied behind her back and shoved in the back of my car under Declan's orders. I just stand there, watching the entire scene play out with my usual level of indifference.
"Finn!"
Declan yells right up in my face.
"For fuck's sake, get your shit together. Take her to Lakewood and put her in a room."
So I do. Because that's my job. I get in the car, start it up, and make my way slowly through downtown and over to Colfax, deciding against the freeway since there's only one freeway route over to Lakewood anyway, and it looks packed with traffic as I pass by. I drive slow, not in a hurry, and I look at the woman in my back seat from the rearview mirror. She stares back, daring me to speak to her. But I don't. Because I just don't care enough about what's happening to put forth the effort. Almost an hour later, she's in a dimly lit room, hands cuffed to the table, ankles shackled, screaming threats at the camera and two-way mirror that would make a biker blush. I'm standing on the other side of the mirror in a room filled with monitors, holding a bag of Mrs. Fields chocolate chip cookies I got from the vending machine, feeding them into my mouth one at a time, watching her. She's tiny. Everything about her is small, but fierce. Nothing about her is weak. The door bursts open and Declan walks in, slamming it closed behind him. Izzy Gray hears it. The room isn't completely soundproof because of the mirror, and stops spewing threats to tilt her head and listen.
"Did you talk to her?"
Declan asks, slumping into one of the two chairs. "Nope," I say, shoving the last cookie into my mouth, bunching up the empty bag and tossing it towards the trash can. I miss, but don't pick it up. "I have no clue what's going on, so just waiting on you. Where the fuck have you been?" Declan looks at me with an expression that says, "Watch your mouth, son," but doesn't bother to say the words out loud. Doesn't have to. We both know who's boss here, and it sure as fuck isn't me. He pulls up a screen on one of the many monitors stationed around the observation area, which displays a dossier of Miss Gray. Three others contain footage of the raid. One is a live image of a chest cam on an officer still on the scene. Two are looping different discoveries found in her back rooms, and the last three are trained on her, inside the interrogation room.
"Okay, so this is where we're at. We got an anonymous tip this afternoon that there was a meth lab over at Go Fuck Yourself."
I laugh at the name because I sort of love it. Izzy Gray is totally the kind of person who names a business Go Fuck Yourself. Declan just continues. "Upon arrival, it was clear the tip was bogus, but during the search, the dog sniffed out a sizable amount of C4 explosive."
"What?"
I say, pulling out the chair next to Declan and taking a seat. Her? I flick my thumb over my shoulder at the two-way. Like a lot of it, Finn. I laugh. Bullshit. She's an elf-sized demon, sure, but no one would be that aggressive and call that much attention to themselves if they're holding C4 explosives in their back room. Obviously, Declan sighs, rubbing his temples with two fingertips. Something's going on here. So let's go in there and get to the bottom of it. Wait, I say, placing a hand on his shoulder and preventing him from standing. You think she's... what? Using her little women's empowerment classes as a front for terrorists? Maybe, Declan says. I laugh. Really? I follow the evidence, Finn. If you know anything about me by now, it should be that. And this woman had 500 pounds of C4 in her back storeroom, so let's go talk to her and see what the deal is. I'm Bob, you're Joe. Fuck that, I say. I'm Bob, and you're Joe. Whatever, Declan says, standing up. Bob is good cop and Joe is bad cop. Declan always plays good cop, bad cop during interrogations. It's cliche, but it works. Usually. I've only been working with the Lakewood office for about 3 months, but Declan has already proven himself to be a powerful interrogator, so I generally follow his lead. Besides, being bad cop requires a lot of effort, and I'm just not into that kind of investment tonight. We exit the observation room, enter the hallway, then open the door that leads to the interrogation room, go inside, and close the door behind us. No one is watching on the other side of the glass now, but she doesn't know that. And the whole thing is being recorded, so it hardly matters.
"About fucking time," the demon girl spits. "I want my phone call and my lawyer. If you think I'm gonna..."
"Izzy," I say, because I'm good cop, and he always goes first, and he always uses first names. "You're not under arrest. We're just here to question you."
"Then set me free. Unchain me and let me go. I've got nothing to say."
"What my partner meant to say," Declan adds in his most unfriendly FBI agent tone, "was that you're not under arrest yet. If you want a lawyer, you will be. So think very carefully about that request, Ms. Gray."
"Lawyer," she says.
"Izzy, listen."
"Lawyer,"
she repeats. "His name is Jordan Wells. I'm not saying anything until he gets here." Declan looks at me, almost smiling, which makes me squint my eyes at him for a moment.
"Jordan Wells, huh? You got that guy on retainer?"
"Lawyer," she says one more time. I take a deep breath and walk over to the table, taking a seat across from her. I have no idea who Jordan Wells is, but obviously Declan does. I've only been here 3 months, and his name hasn't come up before, so I'm just gonna roll with it.
"Look," I say, "it's obvious that someone is fucking with you, okay? Even I can see that. So all you gotta do is help us out. Tell us who you're in trouble with. We'll get all the information we need, and you'll go home tonight and sleep in your own bed. How's that sound?"
She's already opening her mouth to protest while I'm still talking. But then she gets a confused look on her face, shuts her mouth, and turns her head.
"What?" I ask. "What was that?"
She shakes her head, but I'm not sure if she's telling me to go fuck myself, which kind of makes me happy if she is, or if she's trying to convince herself that whatever idea just popped into her head can't be true. Declan takes over.
"Look, Ms. Gray, we already know you're involved with some bad people. But what we don't know, and what we need to know, and what we will know before you ever leave this room is the name of the organization and the person you report to. So let's all save ourselves some time and just button this up real quick."
She doesn't take the bait. Just chews her lip and stares at the bland gray cinder block wall.
"Izzy," I say. "It only gets worse if you refuse to cooperate."
"Lawyer,"
she repeats one more time.
"I want to see Jordan Wells, and I want to see him Right the fuck now.
Well then, Declan sighs. We're gonna do this the hard way then. He leaves the room without further comment, which means it's my turn to take over and convince her the lawyer is a bad idea. I lean back in my chair, trying to appear unaffected and casual. Izzy Gray sneers at me. Nice Valentine's Day, huh? I'm not talking to you, so save your breath. I mean, you were over at the tea place, right? Having dinner with your boyfriend before all this happened? She rolls her eyes at me. Oh, I get it, I say, laughing. No boyfriend, then? You were there with all your single girlfriends, trying to forget all about this day, trying to make it go away? Trying to...
I'm not going to fall for that.
She squints her eyes at me, her gaze lingering on my chest like she's looking for a badge. But of course there is no badge. I'm in a suit, not a uniform. When her eyes meet mine, I say, Finn Murphy. Special Agent Finn Murphy. She shrugs like it hardly matters. Declan comes back into the room, slams the door behind him, walks over to the table, plants both hands on the hard stainless steel surface, and says, Got a backup lawyer because it appears Jordan Wells is out of town and unreachable.
Bullshit,
Izzy says, her voice high-pitched and agitated.
I just saw him a couple hours ago. We were going to have dinner.
Ah, I say, snapping my fingers and pointing at her. So that's why you didn't want to talk about it. He broke up with you, didn't he? And on V-Day, too. Jesus, what a dick. But she doesn't take the bait. Just looks down at the table like she's having some sort of private revelation. Finally, after several long, silent seconds, she says,
Then call his partner, Glenn Stratford.
Can't, Declan says, which has me curious as to what he's playing here.
Why the hell not?
Izzy yells. Because the whole office is shut down for the midwinter holiday. She scrunches up her nose. It's a nice nose. Small, with a slight upturn at the end of it, which I have to admit is kind of cute on her.
What?
She breathes. Declan shrugs. That's what the answering service told me. On midwinter holiday for the next week.
But that makes no sense.
Izzy whispers under her breath. Why not? I ask.
Because,
she says.
It... He... We were... Never mind why, okay? It just doesn't. There's no such thing as a midwinter holiday.
Declan and I exchange a glance. He picks it up from there. So... You can either find another law firm and spend the night being booked and violated as your internal cavities are searched for drugs while we get another warrant and seize the contents of your house. He stops to smile and spread his hands wide, like he's about to offer a gift. Or you can just make this easy. Make it all go away by being cooperative. I chuckle, mostly at the aghast look on Izzy Gray's face at the mention of a cavity search. But also because Declan plays bad cop pretty well. A knock at the door makes all three of us look at it. Declan walks over, has a whispered conversation with whoever's on the other side, and then nods and takes a file folder from the visitor. He turns back to us and closes the door behind him. Well, this might be your lucky day, Ms. Gray. Seems like we've picked up some chatter about your case. Come with me, Finn. We've got news. I take one more look at Izzy Gray, whose wide blue eyes are darting back and forth between us with equal parts curiosity and fear, and leave the room with my partner. Back inside the observation room, I say, What the hell was that? For real, Declan says, easing himself into the chair in front of the monitors. We've got chatter. Seems like she might be telling the truth. The DC office just sent us an alert about a terror cell using unsuspecting female-owned businesses as fronts for a massive campaign. I can't stop the laugh that bursts forth.
You're joking, right?
Why would I joke? Declan asks.
Because that's... a little convenient, don't you think?
He shrugs. I'm just doing my job, Finn.
So we're just gonna let her go?
No, he says.
No, you're going to take her up to the Silver Springs safe house and keep her there until we figure out what's going on.
Is that legal? Declan smiles.
It is if she agrees to go.
Just make her agree.
And how the fuck am I supposed to do that?
I'm sure you'll figure something out.
Go on. I'll text you directions to the safe house and meet you up there later. And don't underestimate this one.
He slaps the file onto the desk, opens it up, and points to something.
I read the paragraph, and yet another guffaw comes out in response. This tiny woman might be the most interesting thing to happen to me since I came to Denver. Because Izzy Gray has the rank of 7th degree black belt in jiu-jitsu. That's like 10 years of serious disciplined study.
Who the fuck is this chick? I ask.
That's what we need to find out, Declan says. She might not be a terrorist, but I'll bet you $100 right now she's not who she says she is. Find out, Finn. And then call me, because DC is all up in our shit about this new threat, and we need to figure out her connection quick, or lots of people might get hurt.
He leaves me there to figure things out. I study her file a little more. Mother was a veterinary technician, no father listed on the birth certificate, no college education, an assortment of odd jobs since age 18, including a Burger King in Waco, Texas, one Nate's Auto Repair in Escondido, California, Hialeah Racetrack in Florida, and then a short stint as a cab driver in New York City. All of which is weird in and of itself. Her job history reads like a classic runaway. Except she was already 18. So not a runaway. At least not an underage one. But the really curious thing is that her juvenile record was sealed. Not just sealed, but absolutely sealed. Meaning even the FBI can't see it without a court appearance and permission from a judge. Which is unusual. You have to read between the lines a little to get it. You have to know what the empty spaces mean. You'd have to have been there yourself. Izzy Gray isn't who she says she is. Izzy Gray is lying.
Chapter 3. Izzy. Finn Murphy is lying. I'm not quite sure about what, but I know men. It's my job to know men. And I know when a man is lying. First, he and his partner came in here blustering about terror cells, threatening me with a cavity search if I didn't waive my rights. Then some file got delivered, they disappear, and only Finn Murphy returns, this time trying to sweet-talk me into believing I'm one sleepy judge away from having the entire contents of my juvenile record unsealed and my house seized in a search warrant. And then he said I was in danger. Someone was looking for me. Someone whose identity he wasn't at liberty to divulge. Someone who would hurt me badly if I was found. And that's the only part of those threats that hit home.
So which is it, Izzy? Easy way or hard way?
How about my way, I say.
Sorry, darling. Not an option. Afraid it's this way or the highway.
I consider everything he's told me so far. It's a scary scenario. I mean, you tell anyone that a dangerous person is looking for them, especially after they were just set up and hauled down to the local FBI satellite office for questioning, they tend to believe you. I just don't believe him. I've been too careful. I've been free for a long time, and the only asshole I need to fear is already in prison. I'll take the highway, I say, smiling up at him as the words come out. I'm grateful for your offer of protection. I have to control myself when I say that word to avoid rolling my eyes. But I can take care of myself, thank you. So I'll just be going. I jingle the cuffs, which are still attached to the table. He pauses, thinking, then offers me a very fake smile and says,
"Okay,"
as he reaches into his pocket to reveal a key. Too easy. So I'm still on high alert. But it's all fake, so I play along. This is about Jordan's game, and as soon as the thought manifests in my head, I have to stifle a laugh. What a dick. He turned me down, and then the game started. But I have to hand it to him, that dick is good at this, because this shit is seriously real.
"Something funny?"
Finn asks. "Nothing you need to worry about," I say, rubbing my wrists once he removes my cuffs. "Don't forget the feet," I say, nodding my head at the shackles around my ankles. Finn releases those and backs off, like he wants to keep his distance from me. I find that interesting, because it means he has some idea of what I'm capable of. Would he know that if this was just Jordan's way of starting the game he insisted I would never be playing? I shrug it off as diligence, stand and stretch languidly, like I have no cares whatsoever. Which is a lie. I'm a champion liar. I'm thoroughly intrigued by Special Agent Finn Murphy for two reasons. He's either the man Jordan has assigned to me and is playing along like this performance will win him an Oscar, or... and honestly, I find this far more interesting. He's got no idea he's playing the game. I decide to find out. "Can I have my personal belongings back now? I need my phone so I can call an Uber." He laughs, a loud, incredulous burst of joy that echoes off the ceiling.
"I can take you home, Izzy."
"Fine," I say, feigning surrender. Take me home means sexual fulfillment fantasy, right? Why else would he make that offer? "Let's go then. It's late and I have to be up early to prepare for my next go fuck yourself seminar at noon tomorrow." He studies me a little longer, his hazel eyes searching mine, darting up and down my body with what might be a look of fascination. Men react to me in one of three ways. One, they find me annoyingly aggressive. Two, they find me inexplicably mysterious. And three, they ignore me completely. If I didn't start this evening out with that meeting with Jordan Wells, I'd have chosen number three for good old Finn here. But we are in that game. He is the man I'm playing with. And as far as game pieces go, well... let's just say having Special Agent Finn Murphy fuck me in a sex club is probably gonna be the highlight of my life. He's tall, a foot taller than me, at least. His sandy brown hair is cropped short on the sides, but has some length on the top. Enough length to give him a bedhead look. You know the one, the just woke up after fucking all night kind of style. And his eyes are hazel. Not brown, not green, but both. He opens the door to the interrogation room by punching a sequence of numbers on a keypad, which he doesn't even try to hide from me. Yet another clue that this whole thing is bullshit. I wonder how he got his people to play along. Ah, but that would be Jordan's job, right? Fucking Jordan. Midwinter holiday? Really? That's all he could come up with? Then again, it was all that was needed, wasn't it? Why bother with details that won't matter? I called for him, his office gave me a plausible excuse, I accepted it, and we've moved on to phase two of the game now. Playing. Which is the best part, right? Finn waves me forward, through the door, into the hall, where I wait for him to lead me out of here. I'm ashamed to say I wasn't paying attention when they brought me in, so I don't remember the way. A slip in protocol, I admit. And if this wasn't all bullshit just to set up the sex that will surely be happening tonight, I'd be harder on myself for the lapse. I just follow him instead. We pick up my stuff from a woman behind glass at a counter. My purse is returned in a large, clear plastic bag. And once all that is settled, we make our way to the garage where his car is parked. He opens the rear door and smiles again.
I'm afraid you'll have to sit in back, Izzy. Civilians aren't allowed to ride shotgun.
I shrug, giving in again. I really do have a seminar tomorrow, and I like to be up early to prepare. It's already getting late, so we need to wrap up the deviant sex game quick so I can get some shut-eye before dawn. I sit behind him, then scoot over to the passenger side so I can study him better as we drive. We're at the federal building, all the way over in Lakewood, so the drive into downtown will take at least 20 minutes. I sit back and enjoy my view as he starts the car and makes his way out of the garage.
So, I got a glimpse of your file, Izzy.
Yeah, I say, my mind on the shape of his lips as he speaks. They're nice lips. Kinda full, but not too full. I bet they would feel wonderful between my legs.
See something you like?
He asks. It's only then I realize he's looking at me in the rearview mirror. I'm just curious, is all.
About?
You, of course. You know, how you got mixed up in all this. He frowns in the mirror, squints his eyes at me.
Mixed up in all what?
Oops, he must take this game stuff more seriously than I do. I guess I need to stay in character. Wait, I say, putting my actress hat back on. What file do you have on me? He glances in the rear view, but only for a moment as we get on the 6th Avenue freeway back toward Denver.
Same file we have on everyone once they get our attention.
So you just put it together today?
I didn't. The department did. That's what they handed to Declan when we got interrupted.
Yeah, right before you guys decided to let me go. So what did it say? To make you change your minds?
It's not the file that made us change our minds.
Then what?
The news that came with it.
Which was... Jesus, am I gonna have to lead this guy into participating in a decent conversation now, too? I mean, shit. You'd think banter would be included in the sex game package, right?
Chatter, Izzy. Chatter about what happened to you tonight.
For a second, I think he's referring to my conversation with Jordan. There are several silent seconds of me irrationally picturing these guys listening in on that. Were you guys spying on me while I was at Cella's?
Who's Cella?
The tea shop, you idiot. Did you have bugs over there? Did you hear?
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
he says.
Calm down, ninja. We didn't have bugs over there.
He glances at me in the rear view again, cocks his head slightly as he squints his eyes.
Why? You hiding something? What was really going on over there?
I take a few minutes to consider if he's lying. I can't imagine Jordan bugging the tea room. Like, this whole thing is about discretion, right?
Izzy?
Finn prompts.
You got something you need to share with me?
I huff out a laugh. As if. I laugh again. As if I'm going to be the one to initiate the gameplay. Nope. If I wanted to ask a man to fuck me in front of strangers, I wouldn't bother playing Jordan's game and letting all these people in on it, now would I? You know there's a confidentiality agreement, right?
What?
He asks. Between me and Jordan. I signed it, he signed it, and that means he can't talk to you about shit.
Yeah.
Finn says, getting off the freeway and easing onto Colfax.
That's typically what lawyers do.
So, did he talk to you? Did he tell you anything?
Who?
For fuck's sake, I yell. Jordan!
He's out of town, remember?
I cross my arms and lean back into the seat. Right. We're quiet after that, but I catch him stealing glances at me in the mirror. I don't tell him where I live, but he finds it anyway. Must have been in my file. And parks right out front of the fixer-upper I bought when I first came to town. It's an old house that needed a lot of work, so I got it for the amazingly cheap price of just over $1 million. It's also the only single-family home within 3 blocks of the Capitol building, and there were several developers interested in the property, if only to knock it down and sandwich another apartment building between all the other apartment buildings that have sprung up in this neighborhood over the past decade. There's 2 tall brick buildings flanking the long front yard on either side, and neither of them have windows facing me, so it's unusually private for the city. Lucky me. I am the proud owner of 1 total piece of shit house. Because it needs everything. New roof, new windows, new floors, new plumbing, new electrical. You name it, it needs it. I have plenty of money to do all that, but time is something else altogether. You can't buy time, and that's something I never have enough of these days. So I just live with it, and I don't even mind all the noises the boiler makes, or the way the water takes forever to get hot, or how none of the electrical sockets work on the 2nd floor and I have to run extension cords up the stairs to get light. After living there for almost a year, I find I actually love the place. Even though it's practically falling down, it felt like home immediately. I love walking inside after a long day and just falling into the couch cushions and looking around at the mess. And I love the front yard. There's no backyard to speak of, just a cement slab in between the house and the detached garage. But the front yard, those tall buildings on either side, they make me feel walled in and safe. I am a control freak about everything but this house. It's like the imperfections are perfect, you know? So many people have lived here before me, and each one of them is ingrained into what makes this place a home. It's chaos, but not, because it's history. I check my watch. Almost 9:30. This guy better have a sex club in mind if we want to get this show on the road. I refuse to show up for a seminar on no sleep, no matter how good the promise of sex sounds. But I'm willing to play along for a few hours if it'll get this whole fantasy game over with.
So, Finn starts, like he wants to ask me something, but he's not sure how. Like he's not sure what to do next. Jesus Christ. Fucking amateurs. So, you wanna come in? I finish for him. I mean, you do want to come in, right? He chuckles a little. I can still see him in the rearview mirror.
Are you propositioning me?
Yes, I say. So open the damn door and let me out already. I can't open it from the inside, remember? Our eyes meet in the mirror, hold each other's gaze for the count of 3. Then he laughs and I laugh and he gets out and opens my door. I get out, taking his offered hand to help me, and it's normal. It's normal. I don't know why and I can't say how it happened, but it is. Maybe it's the game. Maybe it's because we both know we're playing. We both know why we're together tonight. We both know what's gonna happen next, and we both need it. I'm not sure, but I like it, I realize. I like the certainty of how things will now play out. I like the prearranged scenario. I like him, too. Sorta. In that new possibilities kind of way. I think he's got potential, and I don't know how or where he's planning on fucking me in front of other people tonight, Hell, maybe this is just a practice run or something. Maybe the game goes on for more than one night? I have no idea, but it's okay. We're gonna fuck, and then he's gonna say something like, "Hey, I know this place we should go." And I'm gonna say, "Okay, let's do that." And then we're gonna make those plans, and... yeah. I haven't had sex in almost 6 months, and I'm way too close to scoring to back out now. We walk up the front walkway, which is made of those old cement blocks from, like, the 1940s. You know the ones. They're all tilted and uneven, so far away from the flat surface they used to be. I've tripped over them several times coming home from the corner bar since I moved in. I joked with my homeowner's insurance chick, Miranda, that they should count as a security system. They're so dangerous. We had a good laugh at that, but she didn't give me the discount. Then there's the trees. They are old and tall and sturdy, just like the windowless brick walls that surround them. Their trunks are easily 4 feet in diameter. And the roots, Jesus, the roots. They are poking up from the earth in all directions, gnarled and twisted and amazing. I'm pretty sure the trees are what killed the walkway. Probably why my plumbing sucks, too. But I don't care. I love them. In the spring, they're like an umbrella. It rains and rains and rains, and almost nothing gets past their jungle-like canopy. It's a shitty yard for growing anything because there's no sun. And my front lawn, if you can call some spotty patches of grass a lawn, is a mess, just like the house. But it's a beautiful yard for sitting in the shade, and that's really all I expect of it. When I get to the door, I turn and smile at him, appreciating him a little more now that I'm no longer handcuffed, as I unlock it.
"What?" he asks. "Changing your mind? We don't have to do this, you know."
I grab his tie and pull him towards me. He's so much taller than me, I figure the logistics of kissing will be comical at best. But the kiss isn't comical at all. There's no awkward nose bumping, no which way do I turn my head, no teeth crashing. He simply bows his head and there he is. His mouth finds mine, his full lips covering me. Then he nips my lip, making me gasp in surprise. I open my eyes to look up at him. Normally, I keep my eyes closed for kissing, but the unexpected pain associated with the pleasure of the kiss knocks me off my game. Did I enjoy that? He doesn't give me time to decide because he takes my face in both his hands and knocks me sideways as he crushes me with his lips. My legs almost buckle for a moment. My heart either speeds up or stops altogether. I'm not sure. My mind spins, maybe from the wine at dinner, but maybe not. I think I swoon.
Chapter 4. Finn. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm gonna lose my job. I'm gonna get a black mark I can't afford to have. I'm gonna... fuck it. Her mouth is delicious. She tastes like dessert and sweet wine. She tastes like Valentine's Day. I kiss her harder after that thought, threading my fingers into her hair, then grabbing fistfuls to hold her close and keep her from pulling back. Because it's been way too long since I had a date on Valentine's Day. And even though she's probably a criminal and a liar who's gonna end up in prison before this is all said and done, I can't help myself. I just react. The tie grab was unexpected. Shit, who am I kidding? This whole fucking thing was unexpected. But it was the tie grab that got my full attention. Little fucking wannabe dominatrix, that's what she is. Newsflash, Izzy Gray. Headline reads, "Not gonna happen." I guide her through the open door, making sure she doesn't trip over the rug, and kick it closed behind me as I continue my punishing kiss.
"Upstairs or on the couch?" she asks, still kissing me.
I don't answer. Just push her up against the foyer wall and drag her coat down her shoulders. She's wearing a blazer underneath, something completely professional. It comes off with the coat, and they drop to the floor in a heap. Her hands automatically go to my coat, but I grab her wrists and tilt my head at her.
"What?"
she whispers, breathing heavy from the instant passion and heat we've created. "Don't touch," I say. It's not a request, either.
"What?"
she asks again. A small chuckle escapes with her question. "You heard me," I say, undoing the top button of her white blouse. It's a feminine blouse, low cut with a tiny ruffle running down the seams on either side of the small gemstone buttons sparkling in the light coming in from the windows on either side of the door. A crooked smile appears on her face. "We're not kissing anymore, but that's okay. We've got time for more of that later." She huffs out another tiny laugh, but this time it's laced with cynicism.
"Is that how you like to play?"
"Sure," I say. "My time, my game, my rules. You want me to leave, Izzy Gray, owner-operator of one go-fuck-yourself empowerment establishment? Just say the word, and I'm out." She stares at me, still smiling. "But if you want me to stay, we do it my way."
"Fine," she says. "But it had better be worth it."
"Had it?" I ask. "Or what?"
"Or I'll quit,"
she says, back up, pressing her body against the wall.
"And stop playing. So if you fancy yourself a top, you better know what you're doing."
I laugh. Like, I think this might be the truest moment of pure joy I've had since my father died. I know what I'm doing.
"Good," she says,
bowing her head slightly so she can look up at me through her long, thick eyelashes. Her blue eyes are wide and calm.
"Because I do, too."
I rip her fucking blouse open. The tiny fake gemstone buttons go flying, skittering across the hardwood floor, and then I rip her fucking bra open, too. The front closing clasp breaks, and Izzy lets out a small gasp.
"Do you have any idea how much I paid for this fucking bra?"
"I'll buy you another one," I say, dragging the blouse and bra away from her body so she's forced to present herself to me, naked from the waist up. My hands grab her tits automatically, taking what is now mine. Her eyes are still wide, but no longer calm. They're teeming with shock, excitement, and a healthy side of desire as I fondle her, pinching her nipples hard enough to make her close her eyes and hiss out of breath.
"Be careful," she growls. "I have a very fine line, Agent Murphy, and if you cross it, you're gonna find out where my boundaries are immediately."
Yeah. Pure joy. I kiss her mouth again, my tongue pressing against hers, my hands still busy playing with her breasts. "A less experienced man," I whisper into her mouth, "might take that as a threat, Ms. Gray."
"It's a promise,"
she whispers back, her words still laced with dessert and wine.
"Not a threat."
"But I take it," I say, ignoring her, "as a challenge. Fair warning of the rules over with. You will now stop talking and just listen." Another small, incredulous laugh escapes, but it's cut short when my hand slides up her breast and lands on the side of her neck. I don't squeeze. She doesn't need that extra embellishment to understand what that signal means. Her throat muscles move as she swallows down whatever it is she's feeling. Fear? Probably not. She's far too capable in a fight for fear to be her first reaction. No, that hard swallow was desire. My other hand slips into her slacks. They're not tight around her waist, kinda loose, actually. Riding low, like her hips are the only thing keeping them up. Like these pants might be left over from a time when she was heavier, but she keeps them around to wear on days she wants to be comfortable at work. Or, and the second thought is far more likely, she wears them loose in case she needs to use one of those kickboxing moves she tried on the cops back at her work tonight. But who cares? I find her wet between her legs and decide I was right. Desire. I know your type, I say, leaning in to whisper the words into her ear. She sucks in a breath of air and a chill spreads across her neck, making her skin prickle up. The tiny, soft hairs just below her hairline are standing on end. You're a control freak. You took martial arts to maintain that facade. You run that woman's empowerment class to spread your brand of control to others. And to be a leader. You like to lead, don't you? She stays silent, which pleases me immensely, because it means she took my command seriously. Don't you? I ask again. And again, she reads me correctly, because she answers. I just know my place in the world, that's all. And what is your place in this world, huh? I ask, taking my hand away from her neck so I can tenderly stroke her cheek with my fingertips. The one we live in tonight. She stares up at me, her eyes wide again, still filled with desire, no fear. To play your game until one of us wins. Really? Are you sure you want to play? I'm a formidable opponent. Very fucking sure, she says. And now her eyes are slitted, almost closed. And it's not with desire. It's with clear defiance. Which almost makes me laugh, because she gave in and challenged me back in the same breath. I like that, I realize. I like it a lot. I have no clue how we got here or why we're doing this. But whatever. It's fun. So I don't really care about the how or the why. I only care about what comes next. I take both her hands and place them near the button of my pants. She doesn't require clarification, and she pops the button open without comment, her eyes never leaving mine as she unzips me, reaches inside to grab my cock, and begins to massage it until I feel myself grow under her touch. I close my eyes, barely a blink, but I allow myself to enjoy the moment. She stays quiet, at least with her voice. Her eyes, her expression, the movement of her hands, those all speak to me in a way that doesn't require speech. I fondle her tits again, this time gently, and smile at her. There's no need for dominance and submission roles when partners are playing the same game. I don't even need to encourage her further. She lowers herself to her knees, pulling my cock out as she descends, her eyes on mine, and opens her mouth. I'm fully hard by this time. She's, I sigh, perfect. Like, fucking perfect. Like she's done this before, like she knows how to control a man by giving in. Is she controlling me? But I don't have time to think about it, because just as that question pops into my head, she swipes her tongue across the tip of my cock. I long blink again,
smile as I enjoy one more moment of pleasure, then open my eyes just in time to see her take my cock fully into her mouth. Words aren't necessary. It's something I've learned over the years through practice with other women. When two people are living in the same world, playing the same game by the same rules, you only need to react. Which is what I do next when I grab her by the hair and give her the encouragement she needs to take me deep into her throat. She opens her mouth wide, gags a little, which makes me react again, easing up on my demand. But she doesn't pull back. Instead, she reacts to my submission, sucks in a deep breath of air, grabs my thighs with both her hands, and presses herself up into my groin until my balls are pressing against her chin. Jesus. Now that is what I call control. She pulls back, saliva spilling down her chin, and starts pumping my cock with both hands, using her own spit as lubrication. Looking up at me, she smiles. I smile back. You, I say, are not how I saw this day ending, Izzy. She shrugs, smirking. It's a good game, so far. Oh, Ms. Gray, we haven't even begun yet. She stands up, her hands still busy on my cock. But then she pulls away, and her slick hands find her own breasts and begin to massage them. She lifts one breast up towards her mouth, her lips parting, bringing her nipple closer, closer, until I almost come watching her tongue sweep across the peaked bit of flesh and swirl around the small, slightly darker circle of skin that surrounds it. I can't stop myself. I grab her tits and lift them both to my face, burying myself between them. Her hands slip behind my neck, her long fingernails scraping against skin, sending a chill through my entire body.
I think I need to see you naked, I say, looking down at her.
Now. Her fingertips find the waistband of her trousers, and one small jiggle later, they find their way over her curves and drop to the floor. She steps out of them, kicking them aside as she kicks off her shoes. And now she stands before me wearing only thigh-high stockings attached to a sexy garter belt. No panties. Just the belt. Jesus. I say it out loud this time. What the fuck? She smiles, knowingly, coyly.
You like? Or not?
Oh, I like, I say. I like very much. I just
didn't expect me to be, what, seductive under all that control?
Did you wear this for Jordan? I ask.
What?
She looks confused, which is cute on her. I touch her hair, unable to resist feeling her softness. Such a surprise. Jordan Wells. I mean, it's Valentine's Day, and hey, I throw up my hands. I'm not usually a guy who takes advantage of a woman after a crushing breakup, especially when said breakup occurs on V-Day, you know? But fuck it, I don't give a shit. His loss, man.
You think I'm dating Jordan?
Well, you're obviously dating someone. And you had dinner with him tonight, at the very sexy little tea room across from your work, so...
So what? That means I'm fucking him? He's my lawyer.
Okay, I say, hands in the air. But if you didn't wear this for him, then who?
Well, I'm with you, aren't I?
Avoidance, which annoys me. So I say, hey... taking her chin in between my thumb and forefinger to tip her head up to me. No talking rule is still in effect. She shrugs, which is her silent way of saying, you're the one who brought it up, asshole. I forgive her attitude. I mean, she's obviously lying.
She might be willing to play this little game with me tonight, but emotions are off limits. And I'm 100% on board with that. I started this day with too many emotions, filled with dread and an overwhelming desire to be alone,